Welcome to the O Woman Podcast, where we discuss so many things about women's sexuality, bodies, thoughts, and lives. We'll talk about everything from our relationships to our orgasms to our children and our ovaries, and we'll share outstanding experiences and ordinary ones. I'm Emma, and a big open welcome to you. I just want to remind you today, before we get started on episode 35, about the ongoing drawing or contest that's happening right now with O Woman Podcast. Started Wednesday, it's going to be going until New Year's Eve. Just a reminder, you're able to win one of two $15 gift cards to Adam and Eve Adult Store and Sex Shop. I would advise you to shop online. That's easier, but you could go into one in person if there's one near you. The way you enter is really easy. All you have to do is like the O Woman Podcast Facebook page. And on your honor, I'll believe you, tell someone about the podcast. Share a link, tell a friend about it, talk to a coworker about it, anything like that. That counts. But if you like the Facebook page, I'm going to assume that you have gone ahead and also told someone else about it. Please do that. So those of you that have liked the Facebook page by midnight on Christmas Eve are entered into the first drawing, and the winner will be decided on Christmas Day from the pool of contestants. And then the second drawing will happen on New Year's Day, with that window ending on New Year's Eve at midnight. Same thing. So make sure you check out owomanpodcast.com for more details. Check out the Facebook page for more details. And enter. Like the Facebook page. Enter the contest. The giveaway. It's free. Come on. It takes probably 30, 50 seconds of your time. 30, 60 seconds of your time. All right. So the show today, episode 35... is all about facts about vaginas that you maybe never really knew. Beliefs about vaginas, ideas that people had about vaginas, like kooky ideas that people had in the past, that you maybe weren't really aware of. Now, this podcast is based off of an article written by Amanda Shirker that was on the Huffington Post recently, and I found it to be really interesting. The link to that article is embedded in the post that goes with this podcast episode right now, and it's also found on owomanpodcast.com's resources menu, in the section resources on sexuality. So check that out so you can read the article. And, if you really want some written information about what I'm talking about today. So there's six major facts that she highlights in her article and talks about. Just generally, it's misconceptions about vaginas, and we still commonly have a lot of misconceptions about vaginas and how they work, but we don't tend to think that they're like as bizarro as these weird misconceptions about vaginas. Now, the first one I'd already known about before I read her article, and it's probably my favorite because it is the kookiest and the weirdest, and you'll just have to wait till I explain it. So what it is it's called vagina dentata, which really means teeth in the vagina, or toothed vagina. What this is people in multiple folk tales, like in the past, you know, this isn't a very modern thing at all, but in folk tales in multiple countries and different continents around the world, there are a couple stories where the legend of the vagina and how that works is that there's teeth inside of the vagina that have been known to bite off the penis of bad guys, or even just bite off the penis of good guys trying to have sex with their lady friends. This is considered to be like a danger, so of course you don't want your penis bitten off by vagina teeth. And usually in these legends and myths, the men have to do some sort of heroic event that involves them quote-unquote conquering the beast, which I suppose in this case is the vagina, which that has a lot of weird implications anyway if you think about it, and removing all of the teeth. So in one of the legends that I've read, I believe it was a Native American legend. I'll have to check it out and try to remember. But the guy is able to remove all of the teeth. It's like an evil witch tricks him and is like, hey, do you want to have sex with my beautiful daughter? Or something like that. But it's not really her beautiful daughter. She's like a slave that the woman has. And this woman that she has uses her vagina teeth, and she chomps off men's penises, even though the poor slave girl with the teeth in her vagina doesn't want to be doing this, but the witch has her under control. So she invites men in to do it, and one man discovers what's going on, and so he goes in and says, yes, yes, I'll have sex with her. And he is able to get the witch, like, I don't know, kill her, banish her, take her power away, I don't remember exactly, and, like, you know, kind of save the woman and remove the teeth from her vagina, which, in this legend that I've read, it's kind of a sad thing for her to have them. She doesn't want them. Except he leaves one tooth behind. Now, what do you think that would be? If you said clitoris, you're right. So that's hilarious to me. That's part of one of the legends about it that I've read, that originally all, you know, vaginas had teeth, or some vaginas had teeth, and heroic men came and removed them, but left one tooth that was a special pleasure tooth. And I think that's really funny that somehow in this legend the vagina had teeth, but then also that the clitoris was like a tooth turned into a clitoris, which I find pretty hilarious. Now, you're probably wondering, why in the hell are vaginas with teeth part of legends of different cultures? Now, there's a lot of things, a lot of reasons that might be. Probably the biggest one is that vaginas they're a dark, damp, mysterious cave place. You don't know what's going on inside of there if you're a man. They're mysterious, especially in cultures where men don't witness childbirth. They're not around all of the period stuff. They're not in that. It's a very private female world, the vagina and what goes on inside of it. So it makes sense that there would be certain legends that kind of make the vagina a bit of a fearful place because it's an unknown. And as we know, most humans are scared of the unknown. So why not imagine that it has teeth and that it could hurt you, that there's some sort of secret female power that could overtake you and take your manhood away, which is something that appears in many other cultures too, that concept. It's not necessarily with, you know, teeth in the vagina, but women being able to take the manhood away from men, either through men ejaculating inside of them, they sort of somehow take the power away from them with their sperm, by taking their sperm, you know, or different things like that. But that to me seems like the biggest reason why these cultures exist is because it's an unknown place, and you have to be able to explain an unknown place in some way. Another really cool little known fact that actually isn't true, but that was once thought about vaginas, was given to the world by the overly logical, too smart for their own good white men of European descent, who imagine that they're able to explain away the female body without really knowing anything about it, and just in the beginning of scientific understanding and trying to explain the way the female body works. And this one is that they decided that ovaries were like cold parts of the woman's body, and this is the reason that they decided that this was the case. Males' balls, testicles, scrotums, etc., are outside of their body, and that's because their penis is outside too. So their penis and their balls are outside of their body because they have warm sexual centers, penis and balls. So if they go inside their body, they'll get too hot. But women's sexual organs are cold, and so that's why they have decided to form inside of the female body, because they get cold, or they have a cold center, a cold energy, a cold sexual energy, which to me sounds kind of like you're indirectly saying women are frigid and not interested in sex, and men are hot and interested in sex all the time, which was probably one of the reasons why this temperature idea made sense to explain it away at the time, is during this time period, women weren't supposed to be interested in sex. If you listen to the episode I did about just the history of the vibrator, there's different parts in history when women weren't supposed to even like sex. Orgasms weren't even for women. Remember, the orgasm didn't even apply to women. The word just applied to men. This idea is also really bizarre and interesting and shows a lot about our history of understanding bodies. Because you can tell that the people creating the theories at the time were men, because they were using themselves as the prototype body, and women are sort of the strange deviation of the prototype body, the second sex, as many would say. But interestingly, if you think about it, many of the parts of humans are, when we're growing in the womb, they're actually geared to be a prototype for a female. Babies do not begin to grow penises until they they get all of the hormones flooding in their system, and their body recognizes that genetically they're supposed to be a male, so then they start to grow a penis. But unless they get those signals sent to the developing fetus, or if the fetus for some reason can't receive those signals saying, you're a male, you're a male, you're a male, it won't grow a penis. It'll just follow along its supposedly prototype course and become a female. I read a really fantastic book called Woman in Intimate Geography by an author named Natalie Angier. It's A-N-G-I-E-R. I don't know if I'm saying that correctly. I'm definitely going to do a book review on this book sometime in the future. But where a woman was... She was born a woman, blah, 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 etc. She gets to be 22. She's in college and she's realizing she'd never really had periods. And she... Something seems like maybe wrong. She's like, wait a minute, this is strange. And she goes to the doctor and she finds out that the reason she's not having periods is because she doesn't actually have a uterus. Her... Vagina ends into nothing inside of her body. And she has, when they checked her out, they realized she has, like, actually testicles that are internalized. Not in the way this weird theory of, in the past, where ovaries are just internal testicles. It wasn't in that way. It was actually, they did a genetic test on her, and they realized her genetics were saying she was a male. But she appeared to be a female. All aspects, like external aspects of her, appeared to be a female. She felt like she was a female. That was her identity her whole life. And she believed it. She said, I'm a woman. This doesn't make sense. I'm not, if I'm genetically a male, I don't care. I'm still a woman. But the reason they determined why that happened with her was because she had some sort of funny genetic thing going on when she was a growing fetus in the womb. Some genetic disorder, you could call it that, or whatever, where her body... The fetus's receptors that are supposed to receive the information that says, you are a male, were blocking, they were not functioning. So they did not get the information that said, you are a male. So they continued along the normal course and became a female prototype. So I really think that it's interesting that this theory, talks about how women have internal testicles, that kind of thing. Because it's really the other way around. This is also my opinion a little bit, but think about it. Women have nipples because we need to nurse babies. Why do men have nipples? There's absolutely no reason why men have nipples. Like, actually. I mean, they can get pleasure from them, they can enjoy them, but there's no actual evolutionary reason why men have nipples. And the reason men have nipples is simply because as the fetus is growing and it is becoming the human that it's going to be, the fetus starts to create the prototype of the basic human up until it gets the information about being a male or a female, and then it starts to specialize its body to be one or the other. If it doesn't receive those markers, it becomes a female. And even if it's supposed to be receiving those markers, like I just explained from the Natalie Angier book, it goes ahead and forms itself primarily as a female body. But the nipples they are already like, okay, somehow the way evolution and bodies and fantastic growth has formed is that it makes sense to go ahead and get the nipples growing on the baby so that if it gets the information about being a female, it's already got a head start. And so when it gets the information about the male, it goes, okay, forget boobs, skip it, but just leave the nipples. Which I find to be hilarious, that it's really just a leftover idea, or a leftover bit of genetic information that was written into the fetus code in preparation for being a female, that males just have this left over. So I really think that fact is super interesting, and just comparing it to the way early scientists, all of the men, early gynecologists, quote unquote, all of the men, there were midwives and nurses and things, so that's different. They weren't making up the rules and saying what women's body, how women's bodies were formed and things like that. It's just interesting to think about that when it's really the other way around. It's not at all what they thought. We are not the other sex to men. In my opinion, they are somewhat the other sex of us because our bodies are made to create human babies inside of us, which takes a lot more focus. And that's why nipples start forming early and things like that. But really, bottom line, there's no other sex. We're we're equally important to both male and female bodies, of course, duh. All right, I kind of got off on a tangent on that one, but I really thought that fact was interesting, and it was worth sharing to put it in context a little bit more, too. So another thing that I had also learned in my early years as a woman, also because I studied one of my three majors in college was women's and gender studies, and so I knew already some of this information just through some of the history sections of the classes I took and things like that, but this is just a laughable one, that in the beginning when there was an argument about women deserving to be educated to the same degree as men, a lot of doctors, scientists, men at the time thought, no, that doesn't make sense, and here's why. Because thinking too hard, working your brain too hard, starts to shrivel up your lady parts. This was actually something people thought. If you are working your intellect and your mental capacity too hard, your physical capacity, which clearly men thought women were primarily for breeding, it seems, and looking pretty, at the time, that goes away. Your physical ability goes away. Your female parts are not as female as they were before. And there's not any specifics that I remember about exactly how that happens. Like, does your vagina shrivel up and fall off? No, I don't believe that. But you become less of a woman. And isn't that a fantastic argument for a group of people that probably didn't want women being educated because it was threatening to the way of life? Not like all of those dudes were bad, but they were making dumb decisions. Once again, scared of something you don't understand. So we'll just relegate women to the house and say that is their female calling to be baby creators. You know, whatever. Okay, bizarre, but entertaining, because it's just so damn laughable. If you think about it right now, it's just ridiculous. Another fact about past beliefs about females' bodies, vaginas, things like that, is a rather dangerous fact. I mean, many of these are dangerous ideas, dangerous thoughts when you think about women's safety and being able to value women. And luckily, we realize these things are ridiculous. But some people still think a couple of these things. And this one, actually, as I was looking at the article, in 2012, one of our government leaders, I can't recall if he was a senator or a congressman or a governor, I don't recall, but he still thought that this was true, and I mean, I'm sure someone was like, you are a fool, dude, and he had to do some sort of public apology, but he still thought that in order for a woman to get pregnant, the sex must be consensual. Like, I'm sorry, are you insane? This is 2012. I mean, you must be insane. Where did you live? Did you grow up under a rock? Without any women around? I mean, good Lord. So, this belief is dangerous because that means no rape can be proven. This is the problem. And so now, I mean, everybody except a couple really ridiculous people know that that doesn't make any sense at all. But once, I mean, you can't prove rape, and here's why you can't prove rape. Because if a woman says, this man raped me, there's no proof unless she carries a child from this random guy, and they can prove that. You know, they can say, oh, this looks like him, or she wasn't with anyone, and she, you know, now she's pregnant. And that theoretically could be argued nonstop anyway. But the only way she could prove it, maybe to some degree, is to say, I'm carrying his child, I'm now pregnant. But the argument that you cannot get pregnant unless it's consensual then wipes out the concept of rape in that case. So you're saying he raped you, but now you're pregnant, which means, oh, you can't get pregnant unless you liked it. So you're wrong. And then the other thing is, you can say he raped me, but they're like, where's the proof? You're not pregnant. We have no proof that it happened. Because, I mean, this is way before DNA testing, way before any of that stuff. And even when, you know, when rape was like, whatever, I don't really count it as a bad thing. I mean, half the people in the world do it. Let's just keep on doing it. You know, women are second, of course. So that's why this is just such a dangerous, dangerous idea. And part of what is wrapped into that is that one of the beliefs that kind of was contemporary with the belief about you can only get pregnant if it's consensual had to do with you can only get pregnant if you have an orgasm. And you can only have an orgasm if the sex is consensual. You're not going to if you're being raped. So it is such a dangerous, dangerous concept. And when I was looking at the article, I didn't know that someone in 2012 actually said something to support the fact that, like, you can only get pregnant if it's consensual. I mean, that's just unreal. And I could rant about this for a long time, but I just wanted to make you aware of that as a thought, because until I was around a lot of other women talking about this kind of thing, and I was learning different stuff in schools, you know, when I was studying, I didn't know that that was a thing, because I didn't grow up around a bunch of backwards fools. I never knew that that was even a thing. So it's worth knowing, just to know where we come from and the ideas about rape and rape culture that we might have, and a lot of us think that we do in the U.S., that no one prosecutes enough for rape, and a lot of people blame the victim, and it's a big problem, and it's totally true. And so this gives us a little bit of a look at why that's the case, why rapes are overlooked too often, why the victim is blamed too often. So that's a really interesting fact for you. Now, the fifth super interesting fact, which I had never heard ever until I was checking out the Huffington Post article, is that having a sideways, like, uterus and ovaries and vagina is, like, a thing. Like, that's possible? I was looking at it and I was like, I don't even understand what that is about. So, apparently, though, it started in... like brothels, the concept of that started in brothels with Asian women, I believe it was Chinese women, who were prostitutes. And considering that, I mean, I don't know what kind of conversation goes on behind closed doors in a brothel, you know, almost 100 years ago, I don't really know. But, I mean, it's a bunch of, you know, rather entitled, you know, rich enough white men going to a brothel. And it became some sort of sick joke, but also, like, just, you know what I'm talking about, to talk about the Asian women that were the prostitutes and say that they had sideways vaginas. So not only were they kind of insulting them, they were also making them freaks beyond just being, having to deal with gross men all the time on them. And this was during a time when, you know, women didn't have that many rights. And, of course, an immigrant woman who may or may not speak that much English and is working in a brothel doesn't either. So, anyway, so that's another really strange fact. But I didn't even know people, like, had that as an idea, that vaginas could be sideways. So that's a little weird one for you, with an extra side of annoyance at the way people treat women sometimes. Good Lord. And the final fact that was listed is one that I'd heard about before, and I think it's really interesting, is that periods are somehow, like, potentially life-threatening to men if they encounter them, or if they interact with a woman when she's on her period, or just, like, dangerous in some way. And different cultures have different ideas about how dangerous or not period blood is. But I mentioned this in my episode that I did about having period sex. A lot of people still have a stigma about it. And it's not just because, oh, it's involving blood, which is sometimes something you shy away from, because blood usually means bad, like, I'm bleeding, it's bad. But it's also because of, from many different cultures, many different countries, a history of, being hesitant around women when they're on their period. In some cases, because it's, like I said, a private woman's thing, and you're like, what is going on? In other cases, women are considered to be unclean, which is utterly ridiculous. But then in other cases, like, men are scared of periods, but also they revere them at the same time. And they're in awe of the fact that it's clearly related to the fertility cycle and to being able to reproduce babies, which is the humongous, huge, overwhelming power that women have that men don't have. I mean, they definitely participate in it, but their participation can last, you know, anywhere from 5 to 30 minutes, and then they can peace out, which hopefully they don't. Hopefully they stick around. But a woman, in order to have a child, has 9 whole months of hanging out with that growing baby. So I love reading about the traditions and cultures, traditions and different beliefs of different cultures. That's probably my first love in life, is interesting, being interested in that, different religions, different ideas about bodies and beauty and things like that. One of the other majors that I had in college was anthropology, so, which is the study of humans. And there's cultural, which studies culture more, and there's physical, that studies physical traits like genetics and evolution. And I liked all of it, but I particularly have always loved cultural anthropology, looking at the way different cultures treat the world, the way they view the universe that they live in, and that's what's so fantastic. And finding the connections between the human condition and all cultures. So one of those really fantastic connections is beliefs about periods and how in many cultures there, like I said, is a fear or a hesitation around a woman with their period, or at least just a cloak of mystery to some degree. Maybe it's feared, maybe it's interesting. For example, in Mesoamerica and you know, the distant past, in prehistory or early history in Mesoamerica, there was a bloodletting was a thing. So cutting yourself and bleeding, it was sort of a sacrifice. It was a ceremonial thing. You didn't kill yourself, but you did some bloodletting. And sometimes people would kill other people and let their blood in that way, like, you know, straight up sacrifice. But you could also do bloodletting with yourself. And one of the places that some groups would cut themselves, the men would cut themselves on the penis. They'd cut themselves in a soft skin area that would bleed a lot. And generally, this was associated with having some sort of fertility ceremony, which makes sense because if you're thinking of a woman having a period and bleeding from that area, and you know that it's connected to fertility and the cycle of life, why would you not try to emulate that in your own masculine way if you are so in awe of the experience and what happens? And the power that goes with it, because that is a large part of it too, the power of having a period. So why would you not try to emulate that in your own life to get your fertility needs, whether it's growing crops, having an extra son, you know, things like that, having your goats have lots of babies, you know, who knows, but that it's actually about being able to claim and understand and be a part of a really intense unknown power that you don't really know about. So luckily in the US today, people aren't straight up horrified about periods. The discourse about periods is getting more open, women talking to women about it, and then, you know, partners especially discussing it and having period sex and not being worried about it and things like that. But a lot of people still are like, whoa, that's blood, that stresses me out. So that's just an interesting thing, and another way that you can look at our current understandings of women's bodies, their vaginas, whether or not they have teeth, their periods, whether or not they're life-threatening to men, their uteruses, whether or not they can grow sideways or not, pregnancy, whether or not you can get pregnant, if it's consensual, you know, only if it's consensual or if it's any sort of intercourse at all, whether forced or otherwise. But it's really great to have this as a memory, however frustrating some of these facts are, because it allows us to look at where we've come from in understanding women's bodies and just see where we're going and see how far we think we've come and how much more we have actually to learn about sexuality and women's bodies and men's bodies and babies' bodies and humans. We still have a lot of growth coming for us that we need to be a part of, but thank God we don't believe that women can't get pregnant if they're raped. Thank God we don't believe that women have teeth in their vaginas. Now, that would be a horrifying experience. I would imagine that, like, the wedding night, the newly married husband has to go pulling all of the woman's teeth out. So I just want to thank the Huffington Post for having a really cool article about this that is clearly not, you know, based in fact. Good information that I had already known and wanted to share with you. Just a reminder before we end the show today, I want to remind you about entering the giveaway, the contest. Do it. Remember, you could win one of two $15 gift cards to Adam and Eve. All you have to do is like us on Facebook and share a link, information, something like that with a friend, a family member, a coworker, someone you care about, whatever. Share information about the Own Woman podcast. As always, I want to remind you to subscribe to us on iTunes and rate the episodes on iTunes, the shows, so that iTunes knows we are a podcast. Also, email Emma at Own Woman Podcast if you have questions, comments, thoughts for a future show. And the website, your big source for all things O Woman, is owomanpodcast.com. Thanks again for listening. I love talking to you guys. Hope today's episode wasn't too rambly and ranty, but I was just very excited about it. And I will talk to you on Monday. Okay, bye.